But Justin Trudeau was here a few days ago, and he gave like a 90-second lecture about quantum computing. And in that spirit, I kind of want to start somewhere else. I want to start with about the same credibility as Justin Trudeau, with how galaxies form.
You know this is being recorded.
Well, may God have mercy. So, I don't know how the story starts, but maybe quite a bit later than the Big Bang, the universe is filled with dust. So there's a dust speck at X. And gravity is too weak to really play a role yet. So these dust specks are just moving according to, like, it's Newton's first law. So there's some momentum field. So it has momentum P of X. Okay, and then you wait for time T. Okay, T billion years. And then the new position of the dust speck will be X plus T times P of X. So maybe here's X, here's P, here's the distribution of momenta. And then after some time, let's see, this is all a positive amount of momentum, so everything is moving to the right, but maybe at different speeds. This guy is moving faster than that guy. So after a little while, it looks more like this. Okay. And now these vertical tangencies here are places where the dust has acquired kind of infinite density. And maybe that's dense enough for gravity to start to do its thing. Okay, and that's how galaxies get started. So I think that's like two galaxies. This is the Zeldovich model. And I'll say nothing more about it. So the talk is about symplectic geometry.
And theology.
And, well, symplectic manifolds and their Lagrangian submanifolds, not shifted, but I think it sort of fits in the theme of the conference anyway. Not shifted, not even holomorphic, to start. So R2n is a symplectic manifold. Symplectic form is dp1 dx1 up to dpn dxn. And okay. A submanifold of R2n is Lagrangian if omega vanishes on L. My talk is really about exact Lagrangians. It's exact Lagrangian if whenever I pick a one form whose derivative is omega, I can find a function on L whose derivative is that one form. Okay, so if this is true for one form, it's true for all one forms. And the standard one form is P1 dx1 plus up through Pn dxn. So exact Lagrangians are intensively studied, partly because Floor theory is easier for exact Lagrangians, but there's an intrinsic reason to study exact Lagrangians. Which is Arnold's nearby Lagrangian conjecture. So what does this say? It says that if I have two exact Lagrangians, if L1 and L2 are exact in R2n, and L2 is nearby L1 in the sense that L2 is contained in a tubular neighborhood of L1. Then L2 and L1 are supposed to be Hamiltonian isotopic. So that's the natural equivalence relation on Lagrangian submanifolds. And
do we have any kind of practice or anything like that?
Well, I think it's usually stated that way, but no, it's not necessary. Well, who knows whether it's necessary or not, but conjecturally not necessary. So what it says, so something is necessary. So if they're not compact, then there should be some kind of boundary condition too, but let me not get into it. So what it says roughly is that exact Lagrangians have a topological nature. So taken up to Hamiltonian isotopy, topological nature, there's no moduli. So that's in contrast with, general Lagrangians. Right, that's a Lagrangian in the blackboard, and so is that. And they're, in a tubular neighborhood of each other, but they enclose a different amount of area, so they're not Hamiltonian isotopic.
You can tell the moduli are discrete without conjecture.
Say that again?
You can tell the moduli spaces are discrete without conjecture.
You can tell something. This says something pretty strong, that they're discrete maybe in the C0 topology. But this is only motivation. I don't have any ideas about the nearby Lagrangian conjecture. Which is difficult. But there are aspects of kind of the topological nature of exact Lagrangians. I mean, it makes itself visible from another piece of Arnoldiana. Well, called the wavefront projection. So if L is exact, that means it carries this function to R. It also carries this function to R to the 2n. These are the x's and the p's. But to be exact says that the p's are determined by the x's. So pi is a df dxi. So we can recover exact Lagrangian, L, from this map to Rn plus 1. This is an n-dimensional manifold. This map is called the wavefront projection. So the x is in the f. Maybe before the proposition. So on the one hand, this is a big help in visualizing Lagrangians. So there's a Lagrangian surface in R4 whose wavefront looks like this. See if I can do it again. About right. It's something, I don't know if it scans on the blackboard, but it's something that you can picture, maybe that you could build a model of in R3. As opposed to this complicated surface in R4, which is much harder to draw. So, basic proposition about the wavefront projection, this topological nature that I'm getting at, is that, let's see, so suppose L1 and L2 are exact Lagrangians in R2n, and that the wavefront of L1 is homeomorphic to the wavefront of L2. Maybe these should be C2 homeomorphic or something. I'm not sure that that's necessary. Then L1 is Hamiltonian isotopic to L2. So, I mean, if I wiggle that Lagrangian around at random in R4, it won't be a Lagrangian anymore. But if I wiggle this hypersurface around in R3, it's Lagrangian lift to R4, all of them will be Hamiltonian isotopic. The converse of this proposition is false. I mean, maybe there's a little piece of a wavefront that looks like this, and it's Hamiltonian isotopic to a Lagrangian whose wavefront looks like this. Okay, these are parts of Hamiltonian isotopic Lagrangians whose wavefronts are not homeomorphic. In low dimensions, maybe 2 and 4 dimensional symplectic manifolds, maybe even up to 10 dimensional symplectic manifolds, there's some kind of finite list of moves like this, kind of Rademeister moves like this, that kind of describe this Hamiltonian equivalence relation in combinatorial terms on the wavefront projection. It's kind of hopeless in high dimensions, though. Okay.
Just the classification is too complex, or there can't be a classification?
There can't be a classification. There's like, there are moduli of singularities. Functional moduli, infinite dimensional moduli of wavefront singularities. Okay. So, since the Arnold conjecture are, you know, discreetly many exact Lagrangians. It's natural to ask how many. Okay, so the first version of this question, settled by Gromov. So if L is compact, there are none. So no compact exact Lagrangians in R2n. So to make sense of the question for non-compact Lagrangians, a good version of this question for non-compact Lagrangians, we should fix a boundary condition. Okay, so here's the kind of thing I mean. Let's let lambda inside of S3, I mean, I think of that S3 as this kind of sphere at large radius, the boundary at infinity of symplectic R4. So, okay, S3 projects to S2 by the Hopf map, so let lambda be the union of three fibers of the Hopf map. Okay, so the question with an interesting answer is how many exact Lagrangians in R4? Are there that fill this lambda up to Hamiltonian isotopy? Contact topology community, these Lagrangians are called fillings. So the boundary of L, the boundary at infinity of L, should be lambda. Okay, so here's half of an answer of Harold Williams, Vivek Shinde, Eric Zaslow, and me. There are at least 50, and conjecturally exactly 50. Sort of describe the proof as three steps. So step one, you want to write down a candidate list of 50 exact Lagrangian fillings.
Is this the fact that you can actually give an answer, is this a particular phenomenon for R4, or does it work with any four manifold with a given contact boundary?
Works for many four manifolds with a given contact boundary.
But you know, the filling question can.
We can say a lot, not everything that we'd like to say, and this is it's not what the talk is about. But yeah. So write down 50 fillings, and then find an invariant that distinguishes them. Proves that they're not Hamiltonian isotopic. And then maybe if you wanted to answer this conjectural part, you would somehow prove that every other filling is Hamiltonian isotopic to one from the list.
What invariant?
That's what the talk is about.
So in terms of this boundary condition, like at first glance, they look kind of randomly. Can you comment like why you choose this boundary condition?
I mean, there's a, it's a torus link is one reason. It's an example where the machine that I'm not talking about today works especially well. But
so it's having three components essentially?
No.
Is it essential that the boundary is a sphere?
No. It's essential that the manifold is exact. Is a Weinstein manifold. Okay, so this part three is as hard as the Arnold nearby Lagrangian conjecture. And if that conjecture were for some reason false, presumably this part three would also be false. Okay, part one.
Is the method intrinsically four dimensional?
No. Well, for part one, yes. So part one is, 50 is the number of clusters in the D4 cluster algebra. And this is, so that's one of the cluster algebras of finite type. This is one, this fact is somehow related to the construction of these fillings of those three hop fibers. Okay, three is too hard. Okay, and two is Nadler's Aslow theory. And that's the subject of this talk. So, what's the invariant? Well, Nadler and Zaslow, they define functor from, so suppose, let me say it as a theorem, since it is a theorem. Okay, suppose, oh, so crucially, R4 is the cotangent of R2. So suppose that L is exact in the cotangent of a manifold M, an exact Lagrangian in the cotangent of a manifold M, and that, some topological condition holds that I'll call, the brain obstructions vanish. So more about that later. Okay, then there's a functor. In fact, a fully faithful functor from local systems on L to sheaves on M. And it's this functor that distinguishes Lagrangians that are not Hamiltonian isotopic. For example, it distinguishes these 50.
How big or small are the
rank one local systems is what's necessary to.
But the functor can be defined.
Functor can be defined for any chain complex of local systems, any chain complex of sheaves with locally constant homology.
And what kind of sheaves do you get?
You get constructible sheaves. Say that again?
Is that real analytic or something?
Well, yes. So the way this is usually phrased, how do they prove this? Well, local systems on a Lagrangian, together with some grading and pinning and something like that, those are objects of a Fukaya category. So this is a subcategory of some kind of Fukaya category of T star M. And the usual Nadler-Zaslow theorem is that this is equivalent to sheaves on M. Well, embedding into this category is Nadler and Zaslow. Identifying the image of that embedding was Nadler by himself. But the way I formulated it, the domain and the codomain of that functor, they're both objects from sheaf theory. So maybe
we could.
Just a different statement. This is the so-called unwrapped Fukaya category that plays a role. Well, the equivalence is onto constructible sheaves, maybe sheaves that are constructible with respect to a real analytic stratification, but or some kind of O minimal stratification.
Do you mean something like L is closed and embedded and asymptotic to a real analytic curve or something like that?
Yes.
And is it really the conical behavior of L which determines stratification, which is?
Well, it's the bound, it's contact infinity of L that determines what the microlocal behavior of the sheaf is like. Okay. Well, so, I mean, I don't need it to prove this theorem. Maybe I erased the theorem, but. So what is the point? I mean, nothing really, but here are some payoffs that might be worthwhile down the line. I mean, it works for, so the construction that I'm about to describe is due to myself and Xinjin. It works for sheaves of spectra. There's a sense in which you can remove the brain condition. Works without imposing brain stuff. And if you apply it in the complex analytic world, it kind of suggests a notion of perverse sheaf of spectra. Well, this is a definition more than a theorem, but and maybe a further categorification, which is not even a definition. Payoffs of my theorem with Xinjin, which I guess I didn't write down anything intermediate. Here's the intermediate thing. Let's do it without floor theory. I don't know how to do that. So what I do know how to do is mess around with sheaves until a functor like this comes out. So what's the rest of the talk? Talk about sheaves with singular support in a wavefront projection. So this is very much inspired by Dimitrov-Tamarkin. at Northwestern, was sometimes called the Tamarkin trick. Okay, then define microlocal monodromy. Okay, I mean, discussing these two things, we'll define this functor. And then part C will just be some puzzles. So, okay, she is on the wavefront projection, so consider a wavefront. So here's one. There's one in R2. Kind of goes off to infinity downstairs. This is the wavefront projection of a exact Lagrangian that looks like this. Okay, this is immersed. And I mean, this functor is going to exist when the Lagrangian is embedded, but the discussion of part A will make sense when the Lagrangian is immersed, and it's easier to draw examples in R2 that are interesting enough to get the point across. So this wavefront projection it chops R2 or M times R in general up into chambers. Right? Don't you draw it again? Right, so here's a chamber, here's a chamber, here's a chamber. It's codimension one, so it breaks it up into some connected components. I mean, to first approximation, a sheaf with singular support in, the cone over L, i.e. in this wavefront projection, for short, is the data of, maybe I should draw it on that picture, a vector space, not a vector space, a spectrum in each of these chambers, right? Okay, that's the first approximation. The red stuff.
Should we think about taking the cohomology in these spectra to get an ordinary sheaf of vector space?
If you took the cohomology of the spectrum, you'd break the singular support, which is, you'd break the conditions to be coming. But yes, those, the cohomology, or maybe when you're talking about homotopy groups, they're about spectrum, they're homotopy groups. The homotopy groups of those should be the stocks of some sheaves and the sheaves of abelian groups on M times R. Okay, that's roughly. And then less roughly, at any smooth point, of this wavefront projection, it should give a map between the spectra that are on either side of the wall. Right, so maybe here's a little piece of a wavefront, it's smooth. We have a spectrum on either side, and there's going to be a map that goes that way. Map between spectra that goes that way. So right? So and then the red stuff and the blue stuff together, they have to obey a lot of conditions, which I guess in the homotopy world are actually a lot of additional structures.
Do you have maps going in both directions or for every path? Or
The wave front, the Lagrangian, it orients, co-orients maybe the wave fronts. So there's a preferred normal direction at every point, which downward, basically downward. And the blue arrows go in the opposite direction from those normal directions. And what conditions do they have to obey?
And do you have one for every wall, or do you have sort of a full family of them for paths?
You have, neither. A sheaf is not literally the data of a lot of vector spaces in linear maps. I guess that is what it is. But there are those vector spaces, or rather spectra now, are attached to open subsets, not to like places on the manifold. And those paths, I guess they're coming from restriction maps, but I'm not literally going to prove some kind of path description of sheaves of spectra. This is just a useful way to get a feel for what's going on. So the maps obey conditions, or they're endowed with additional structures. So for example, at a double point, maybe this word means something different in algebraic geometry. I mean a point where the hypersurface is immersed. I'm going to have four maps, four spaces, south, west, east, north. I'm going to have, they're blue, four blue maps that make a square. And there's a condition that says this square is a homotopy commutative and even a homotopy Cartesian square. Okay, so these are objects of a stable infinity category. It's an exact square. There's a similar condition at multiple points if I have three branches meeting transversely at a point. I'll get an exact cube. And then there's also a condition at the singularities. Well, at the singularities of the wavefront. So for example, in this picture, there are some folds or cusps. Right, and I have an A here and a B here, and I have a map in both directions, and the condition says that the composite from A to A is the identity. So B is equal to A plus C, and the maps are inclusion and projection. And I don't know, you can tell a story like that near other kinds of singularities you can draw. Here's a famous one called the swallowtail. Another description. And maybe you could describe them up to some high-ish dimension, but not in very high dimensions, because there are too many different kinds of singularities. Nevertheless, this is a good way to get a feel for what singular support means. Okay. you mentioned, I guess, so at a general singularity, near a general singularity, you have sheaves on basically a Rn plus one with singular support in the Lagrangian lift of a wavefront singularity, some local picture. Maybe these are sheaves of spectra. And it has a two-stage exceptional collection. It's not incredibly complicated. There's the constant sheaf on that Rn plus one. That's one of the pieces of the exceptional collection, and there's one other one. The maps in one direction are zero, and in the other direction, there's something interesting.
Is there a good notion to construct the sheaf with spectra?
Sure.
Is there a literature on it?
Well, there's a literature on sheaves of spectra, and constructible sheaves of spectra are ones that are locally constant on some stratification. Okay. So, but before I explain what microlocal monodromy is, let me use it. So here's the theorem of Shinjin and myself. So suppose L inside of T star M is, here's some technical condition, lower exact. I would like these wave fronts. Maybe they should be allowed to escape to minus infinity, but not positive infinity. Makes it a lot easier. Is a lower exact Lagrangian. That's it. Okay, then. There's a diagram where I have sheaves on M times R with singular support in the wavefront projection of L. And that has a map to a category I'll call loc eta of L. It's just basically local systems on L. This is microlocal monodromy. And there's another functor to sheaves on M, which is just restrict to M times minus infinity.
Are these sheaves of spectra or sheaves of?
These are sheaves of spectra. And these are local systems, sort of spectra. Okay, then. Okay, there's a diagram like that, and if L inside of T star M is embedded, this microlocal monodromy map is an equivalence of categories. Okay, so Nadler's Aslow is the composition. Start here, inverse of microlocal monodromy, then sheaves on M. Okay, so this muon, microlocal monodromy, it's trying to define a local system on L. So what are the fibers of this local system? So if I have a sheaf F, it's a sheaf of spectra, and it has singular support inside of the wavefront. X in L projects to a smooth point the way front. Then, right, the microlocal monodromy of F, its stock at X, is the cone on, is it still there? On one of those blue maps. It's the cone on A to B, if that's the point X. And those vary in a locally constant way. On the smooth part of the wavefront projection. And they even propagate past double points. Let me explain that. So, at a double point, we have these four spectra and some maps between them, commutative square between them. And it's not just a commutative square, it's an exact commutative square. So since it's an exact commutative square, the cone on S to W is naturally isomorphic to the cone on E to N. Okay, so I can move the microlocal system, the microlocal monodromy of this local system past a double point or multiple point of this wavefront projection. At a singular point, well, you can sort of do it. So maybe there's a fold singularity. And here's A, and here's B, which is A plus something. I have a map from A into B, and from B back to A. And the cone on A to B, so that the microlocal stock of this sheaf F at that point below the fold is C. But the microlocal stock above the fold is the suspension of C, which, let me write it in a way that kind of gives away what's going on, which is the same as the circle tensored over with the zero sphere with C in some kind of homotopy theoretic language. So microlocal monodromy, it's trying to define a local system on L, but and there's no problem doing it on the parts of L that don't project to singular points of the wavefront projection. But if I have a path on L that passes through one of those singular points, so or a closed loop, that passes through a singular point of the wavefront projection. Well, it's going to pick up some shift. Picks up a sphere. So there's a map from maybe the base loop space of my Lagrangian to the moduli space of spheres, which in stable homotopy theory is called pick of S. And this is exactly the kind of data that you can use to twist the, what you might call the group algebra of that loop space. So so what I'm calling loc eta, maybe this is supposed to be eta, loc eta of L, there are different ways of saying it. These are modules. It's not an associative, it's an associative algebra. It's left modules over some kind of Tom spectrum. Of that map eta, or another way to say it is that there's a locally constant sheaf of categories on L, and these are global sections of that locally constant sheaf of categories. So we've been calling that the sheaf of brain structures. In particular, if this map is null homotopic, these are just plain local systems. Maybe in a, after choosing a null homotopy of eta, that category is just local systems of spectra. Okay. So what's eta? So in particular, every exact Lagrangian, it carries a canonical locally constant sheaf of stable infinity categories. The fiber is the category of spectra. No, it's a map from L to a delooping of this pick S. This is the universal space that carries a local system of categories like that. So a Lagrangian. An exact Lagrangian and a cotangent bundle. Well, it's a little bit important. Because L carries another canonical sheaf of categories. So let's just say I'm in Rn again, R2n again. If a Lagrangian in R2n, I guess exact or not, has a Gauss map. So that's a Gauss map to, it's a Lagrangian, so it will be to the Lagrangian Grassmannian. Okay, which is U of n divided by O of n after I choose a complex structure and a basis. And that has some kind of stabilization to U mod O. And this, for what it's worth, this is B squared of O. Is that right? Yeah. So Bott periodicity, it's one of those Bott spectra. So this is B squared of O, the double classifying space of the stable orthogonal group. So I can compose that with B squared of the J homomorphism, the real J homomorphism, which goes to B squared of GL1 of S, which is B of S. Okay, so I gave this talk a few months ago, and this was a conjecture. I think we've proven it now. So theorem, or hopefully not jumping the gun, that those are the same. So this sheaf of categories that you can build using microlocal sheaf theory is the same as the sheaf of categories you can build by delooping the J homomorphism. So brain L comes from the J homomorphism. I just want to point something out. So here's a theorem of Shin's. So if suppose M, I'm not sure if it has to be algebraic or not. Suppose it's complex algebraic. Maybe it only has to be complex analytic. And L inside of P star of M is a holomorphic. Then if I apply the Nadler-Zaslow functor to L together with maybe a abelian local system, I get a perverse sheaf. Maybe it's a shift of a perverse sheaf. So one of the reasons that that's true is because the Gauss map, so the Gauss map for a Lagrangian in the cotangent bundle, maybe it doesn't always make sense, but the stable Gauss map always does make sense. If L is holomorphic, the Gauss map from L to U mod O, this is the real Lagrangian Grassmannian, it factors through the complex Lagrangian Grassmannian, which is SP mod U. And then this maps to B of pick S. So a lot of obstructions to defining brain structures on L, they are going to vanish for a holomorphic Lagrangian. For example, this is a simply connected Grassmannian. So sort of has the feel of perverse sheaves being an abelian category. I guess I didn't succeed in checking this at two, but I think this map, or even this map, this is trivial, maybe away from two, but maybe that's not necessary. So every holomorphic Lagrangian has a brain structure, even kind of this one of these spectral brain structures. So you could look at this theorem and you could say that maybe Lagrangian, maybe constructible sheaves on M that come from holomorphic Lagrangians, maybe you should call them perverse sheaves of spectra.
I'd expect you to need to choose the square root of the complement of the Lagrangian.
Well, is maybe that's the two. I don't know. But meanwhile, SP mod U, it's the complex Lagrangian Grassmannian, but it's also the delooping of U mod O. So you can compose this with a second delooping of B pick S. So there's a map. I'm not saying it has any significance in Kashiwara-Shapira theory in microlocal sheaf theory, but you at least have this map from L into B squared of pick S, which is a moduli space of two categories with fiber modules over S. I'm on video, but maybe here's one speculation is that this is some kind of Betti structure on Dima's sheaf of two categories on L. And I'll stop there.
Thank you. So you promised us an invariant of those 50 Lagrangians. Is it eta?
No, it's the functor. Oh, okay. It's the functor from local systems on L to sheaves on M.
Can you say a bit more about the sheaves of spectrum?
Not really. They don't form an abelian category.
Spectra don't.
So perverse sheaves of spectra don't. But I would just mean like start with pick a null homotopy of this map, and then you have a functor from local systems on L to sheaves on M, and
the local systems of spectra are much more like complexes of local systems, aren't they? Because the spectra is a
yes.
Category, not the abelian category.
Yes, but there's, I mean, but also the sphere spectrum is similar to the integers. And so if you did this with the integers, you would get a perverse sheaf of abelian groups. If you do it with the sphere spectrum, I mean, I'm not saying it necessarily has any significance, but it's something, it's some object that when I extend scalars, so to speak, from the sphere to the integers, I get the perverse sheaf that you would get out of L.
So you're not saying that all constructible sheaves of spectra should be divided into perverse ones, but some special things might be called perverse.
There's certainly not like there's no way to truncate like that. But yeah, that it's only a definition. There's I don't know if it has any significance.
The definition is intrinsically about sheaves. Constructible sheaves are stable categories, stable infinity categories. Do you have a non-stable version of that?
No. I don't know how.
There is no direct relationship with the perverse Schobers or any of those.
Are those a stable object?
No, they're not.
Okay, yeah. I'm quite interested in perverse Schobers, but I don't know if. But I mean, that would be this other blackboard. I don't know if they're the same.
Is there a vanishing cycle functor on constructible sheaves of spectrum?
Sure. You mean for like, if I have a map, then there's a you have a specialization functor and a vanishing cycles functor and the whole package. Anything that you can build with sheaf operations, it's going to make sense if you don't count truncation as a sheaf operation.
Okay, any other questions?